Chapter 31. Tangling Knots. Kairos could hear the shouting as he approached Emperor Somek's chambers. He was on his way to meet with the Emperor and Warlock, no longer Regent, Rashan. But it seemed that there was already a meeting in progress, a contentious one. The Emperor's voice carried down the halls as Kairos approached.
"As of last night,"
were the first words Kairos made out.
"I'm not some lackey to be ordered about. I do your bidding for the glory of the Empire and the safety of her people. I am not a chamber servant. I will not be made a puppet of. When I give a command, I expect..."
Suppressing an instinct of self-preservation that told him to wait outside, Kairos approached the door. The two palace guards who flanked it stood too stiffly, as if afraid to move. No magic held them thus. Neither guard made a move to hinder him as he opened the door.
"I thought I saw the sunrise coming down the hall at us,"
Rashan greeted him, smiling as he turned his attention away from Emperor Somek. The Emperor was clawing at Rashan's arm, trying futilely to remove the demon's hand from over his mouth. Muffled protests sounded from behind that hand. The Emperor's face was bright red with rage.
"Please close the door behind you. Emperor Somek and I were just hashing out the boundaries of power between the two of us."
The Emperor went to his knees, using his weight as leverage to try to pry free from the warlock's grip.
"Oh, just let him go. This is no way to treat an emperor," Kairos chided Rashan.
The warlock shrugged and released Somek, who fell forward onto his hands, gasping for breath after his exertions. Kairos noticed that Celia was present, sitting at a desk in the corner of the room with quill and ink at the ready.
"Let me know if you change your mind about that," Rashan said. "He was getting rather tiresome, and I consider myself the model of patience."
"Sir Brennus," Emperor Somek managed between sucking in lungfuls of air, "arrest Warlock Rashan and throw him in the dungeons. I understand that we have cells for sorcerers."
Kairos looked over one shoulder, then the other. "I seem to have come alone. Had I known I was to be arresting warlocks, I ought to have brought a few from the inner circle along with me. Besides, those cells do not hold much of anything in my experience."
"Warlock Rashan can break out of them any time he wishes," Kairos replied.
He had initially had every intention of politeness, but could not help his reply sounding sarcastic, even to his own ears.
"Is this how it is to be?" Somek asked. "Defied by my advisors and subjects at every turn?"
"It is not defiance as such. I was merely pointing out that your orders were not going to have the effect you intended," Kairos explained. "You no doubt envisioned me marching off to the dungeons with Rashan by the scruff of his neck, throwing him in a cell, then releasing him days later, much chastened and properly subservient. What was more likely to have happened would have been a magical struggle that would have left most of us dead, and Rashan once more in charge of an empire with no emperor." "Emperor Somek, you need to understand that we are neither wooden play soldiers nor your personal handmaidens," Rashan explained, speaking as if to a small child.
He helped the emperor to his feet and brushed his royal robes off where they had touched the floor.
"And you also need to understand that you are the offshoot of a wet little mistake a good friend of mine made 114 winters ago, when he was far from home in the company of his empress."
"None of that matters now. I am emperor. My word is law."
"Celia, my dear, did you happen to write any of that down?"
Rashan asked across the room, keeping his eyes fixed on the emperor as he did so.
"No, warlock," came Celia's reply.
Rashan smiled. "You see?
None of what was said or done actually happened. An emperor needs supporters, loyalists, obedient subjects. Without those, you are just a young man in expensive clothing who happens to have some very noteworthy blood in his veins. Please understand that we are your supporters, your loyalists. If we are not the obedient servants you crave, then see for yourself how many of those you have if our support, my support, were withdrawn."
Warlock Rashan,
does this mean you have not gotten to the point of discussing the arrangements for your absence?"
Kairos asked.
"No, but I suppose we ought to. My sword hand itches to hold a blade, and I'm not sure I trust myself with one in hand while our new emperor persists in vexing me. The sooner I am off to war, the better.
What arrangements are you referring to? Emperor Somek demanded, having recovered enough of his dignity and ill-won egotism to resume demanding things.
Sir Brannis will be running the Empire in my absence, Rashan began,
holding up a hand to forestall the Emperor's nascent objection.
I know, you had thought yourself clever in ordering me away. I let you grow that idea from seeds I planted in your head. You are not qualified to oversee the Empire's flower gardens, however.
But it is my Empire now. I rule it, not you, and certainly not Sir Brannis.
And you will continue to rule it. You will just not run it. You will sit a horse in parades, wave from balconies, throw feasts, but do not attempt to meddle in the affairs of the Circle or the army, and do not get involved in the wranglings among the nobles. Bring in jesters and musicians to amuse yourself, if you like. Get roaring drunk every day, and no man can gainsay you. Take the company of any...
But I would lose the respect of my people, Emperor Somek protested.
No worse than you would by trying to control something you do not understand. Emperor Daris did not even exist, and he was looked upon well enough by the commoners.
Kairos was distracted from the exchange by a sound he was more sensitive to than most, the scratching of a quill. He looked over from the corner of his eye and saw that Celia was writing something. He judged from the pacing and lack of stops when the conversation broke that she was not taking down the current, highly subversive discussion between Emperor and Warlock.
Think about whom you might wish for an empress as well. You may as well aim high. No unwed girl in the Empire could refuse you, Rashan told Somek.
Kairos noticed that the Warlock glanced sidelong at him as he said it, though. Brannis had heard a similar speech from Rashan, and had still not heeded the advice. The scratching noises from the corner stopped, replaced by the sound of chair legs scraping on stone. Kairos looked over to see Celia rising from her task. She sprinkled a bit of sand over the wet ink as an afterthought.
I have finished, Warlock, Celia called over to Rashan.
Ah, excellent. Let us proceed with the formalities then. Emperor Somek, if you would come this way.
Rashan put a hand to Somek's back and guided him over to the desk that Celia had just vacated. The Emperor looked confused, but there was likely so much buzzing about in his head that he could mount no objection.
Kairos followed just behind them, close enough that he could read over the Emperor's shoulder. Seeing over the diminutive Warlock was no trouble at all.
I, Somek the First, Emperor of the Kadrin Empire, do declare as follows. I appoint, in all matters, Sir Brannis Solaran as overseer of the Kadrin Empire, and such decisions as require imperial consent.
Kairos skimmed the rest of the single-page document, and found that it would be his official appointment.
Celia's penmanship was labored. He could see it in the lack of fluidity in the looping letters, where she had moved her wrist in the formation of the curve rather than managing it strictly with the fingers. He realized a vague annoyance at not being able to write the document on his own behalf. With how long she had worked at it, he was amazed at how short it was in the end. He watched the Emperor take his seat and peruse the document. Rashan stood over him like a disapproving tutor, waiting for some mistake to give him reason to berate his pupil. Emperor Somek looked up at Rashan, saying nothing, but conveying a protest by eyes alone. He took up the quill and signed his name to the document, his signature an atrocity of ink.
If anyone requires me, I will be holding court in the throne room with a barrel of wine, Somek informed the three, who had just wrested his imperial authority from him.
He pushed back away from the desk and rose, shouldering his way between Kairos and Rashan, when they were not quick enough to clear a path for him. No one said a further word until the door had closed behind him.
My, but did that not go well? Rashan commented.
To Celia, he said, take this over to the sanctum. Oh, Sir Brannis still needs to sign it.
Kairos leaned over the desk and took up the quill in his own hand. He was growing accustomed to the Kadrin goosefeather quills, though they still felt too light to him. After a quick dip in the ink, he touched the tip to the parchment. Kairos Hinterdale. His hand froze. A dollop of ink pooled where a K was poised to begin.
No, Kairos breathed, the sound filling the silence of the room around him. Sir Brennus Soloran, he wrote instead, as if he were signing a client's name in script more elegant than they could manage for themselves. The ink was given a moment to dry before Roshan sealed it with wax, and an impression from the Emperor's signet, which he then left on the table. "I shall get this to the inner circle straight away," Celia said, taking her leave. Roshan watched her go. Kairos followed suit, wondering if her walk was similar to Abelais or if he was just imagining it. "It is about time I take my leave as well. I had initially thought to have you activate the dagger strike for my use, but I find that I am half a day too late for that," Roshan said, once his attention was turned back to Kairos. "Well, I..." "Well played, Brennus," Roshan interrupted him, smiling. "This is the other reason I feel like I can leave the Empire in your hands.
You can keep up with the game,
ahead of it even, when you have a mind to. I've gathered that Juliana Soloran is aboard."
"Yes, I thought it was about time we used the ships for other than transportation duty. Mune showed the hazard of bringing them into battle against large forces, but I think that harrying tactics are ideally suited to them. The dagger strike will outrun anything we have made thus far.
And you picked Juliana as captain, despite her lack of any naval experience, because..."
"I like having more than one reason for something. The other reason is that in Tellurak she leads as good a group of coin blades as I have seen. She knows ambush tactics better than any of the garrison commanders we have running the army," Kairos explained, thinking the jab at the passive army commanders would fit well with Roshan's view of them.
"So the gallant reason is to get her out of harm's way, and the practical reason is that she is suited to this assignment you have created just for her."
"Ah, but there are at least two more that I can think of," Roshan grinned. It was the same grin he used when he taunted Gravis Archon upon his return to Kadrin. Kairos waited to hear how much of his plan was already laid bare in the demon's mind.
"You are also worried for her reputation. As murders pile up in the city, a select few wonder whether she might be involved. Rightly or wrongly, and I think she had no part in these, she has bits of her past and quirks of personality that make it seem plausible. The last reason is the clever one, though. You cannot investigate Celia's link to Tellurak with her around. If Celia is your girl, Abelais, you can take no action on that knowledge with Juliana about. I certainly hope for your sake that she is, for it will disentangle you nicely from Iridan and Juliana, and keep peace between you all. Perhaps not between Celia and Juliana, though we can work on that over time." Roshan smiled.
"I've been at this a lot longer than you, Brennus."
"You are off to an excellent start, mind you, but you have ages to catch up on. I ran a network of spies from Acardia to Kesh, Kadrin to Safshan, and back again. Unravel the conspiracy against the throne in my absence, and see how it feels. You have it in you."
"Do you know who leads the conspiracy?" Kairos asked.
"Not yet. Work that out, and the rest ought to fall in behind. Trust in Caladrus for advice while I am gone. You can trust him and Aloysia among the inner circle, and Iridan when he returns. The rest are all suspect, either sitting on their hands or actively dirtying them against me."
"Will you go to Mune to find Iridan?"
"Reports are that Mune is stalled. Magrin has been unable to remove forces from the garrison to continue in advance. That would indicate that Iridan is proving his worth after all. I will not steal his glory from him."
"He has held out admirably. I could spare you this, possibly, with another day or two. He keeps asking for you, though, and I think it best if you indulge him in this," Narsekan told Jinzan.
They stood together in a level of the army headquarters that dated back to the Kadrin occupation of Zoran. Rough-cut stone blocks lined the walls and ceiling, others of the same make, worn by the passages of 100 winters' worth of feet, comprised the floor. Wooden beams provided structural support at intervals. Torches flickered and guttered in wrought iron sconces all down the corridor. There was no natural light as far down as they were, and the air hung heavy with the burning scent of pitch-soaked wood.
"You know I prefer a clean death. This sort of business reminds me of the Kadrins. I will not presume to tell you your job, though. Yesterday was torment, waiting for word of the prisoner relenting," Jinzan said. He looked better rested than his claims would have led one to believe.
He would not leave Zoran without an answer to the question of what the Kadrin spy knew of the staff of Galen, and of Anzik.
It was your idea that even let us keep him captive this well. I have never questioned a sorcerer before, at least not under such duress. It is amazing the difference in the sorcerer's mind, compared with the mind of a soldier or a common sneak.
Well, let us get on with this, Jinzan grumbled. He followed Narsikan down the dungeon passageway, unused cell after unused cell. Iron doors, iron bars, a place for souls forged of iron, with hearts that were cold lumps of stone. The Kadrin spy was in the last cell on the right. He hung limp in his chains, dangling from the wall by his wrists, his buttocks not reaching the floor to allow him to sit. His head lolled forward, but perked up at the sound of their approach. The Kadrin was naked, looked to be perhaps 30 or 45 winters in age, if the age of a sorcerer was to be judged thus. Stripped of the illusions he had worn when they found him, he looked slovenly. His hair was flecked with gray, as was his unshaven scruff. Most notable about his appearance, though, were the runes covering most of his flesh, carved in shallow knife cuts. "What is his name?" Jinzan asked. He felt sick to his stomach. The prisoner's own filth pooled beneath him.
"He has not said. You will find him quite hungry and thirsty. I told him he would be fed when he gave me a name. He has not even tried to lie about one," Narsikan said, visibly less bothered by the conditions.
"Has he tried to use magic?"
"He figured that one out quickly. I brought some reports down to read while I waited for him to awaken. He tried to draw as soon as he woke. The sound alerted me that he was ready to interrogate."
A key hung in the lock, a convenience in a place where sorcerers could almost as easily manipulate the mechanism by magic. Narsikan turned it and preceded Jinzan into the room. The prisoner mumbled something, his voice weak, dry, incomprehensible. Narsikan kicked him. After a grunt, the prisoner cleared his throat, spat, and tried again.
"Just Jinzan. The other one can leave."
Narsikan looked to Jinzan, question clear in his eyes.
"Go ahead. I'm in no danger from this one. Even turned loose," Jinzan reassured him.
Narsikan's patronizing smile in reply assured Jinzan that such was not the question he was worried about.
"Just give a yell if you need anything," Narsikan told Jinzan before exiting the cell.
"Food and water. Whether I give him either remains to be seen, but I want them at hand." There was an awkward silence, broken only by receding footsteps. The prisoner looked up at him, bloodshot eyes judging him, weighing him.
"There, you have me all to yourself. Now where's the staff?"
"Not so simple as that," the prisoner replied. "Introductions first, I think."
"You already know my name. Give me yours."
"Ah, here's where we make it interesting. I know who else you are, Captain Denric Zane."
The prisoner grinned with cracked, bleeding lips. Jinzan's heart quickened.
"That torturer of yours, I had no grasp on his throat. You, I can deal with."
"Deal? What sort of deal do you think you can make from that position, whatever knowledge you may possess?"
Despite his bluster, Jinzan worried that there might be a true answer.
"Here? Not much. Maybe something. There? Everything."
"You will have to do better than that."
"Tanner, for starts," the prisoner said. "Kyrus set it all up. Brilliant. Has a sword at Denric Zane's throat. I can give the word."
Jinzan's expression turned from annoyed to fury instantly. He drew ether and thrust it into the runes on the prisoner's chest, ignoring his revulsion at the man's condition. Lightning sparked and crackled along the prisoner's exposed skin. He screamed, thrashing convulsively in his chains.
"You Kadrin bastards! I shall have that wretched swordsman tossed over the side of the ship. We will see how he fights sharks with that blade of his. If that was your master plan, it will not work."
"Backup plan,"
the prisoner managed between coughs as he recovered control of his muscles. Anzik is twin-born, too.
Jinzan's hot blood turned to ice.
No.
His mind fought to deny it, but the prisoner knew too much. Had he seen clues and not known them for what they were? Anzik had always been odd, but had never shown any knowledge from Tellurak. He had just always been cursed by constantly seeing ether all around him.
Where is he? Jinzan demanded. Which one?
Jinzan hesitated.
Both, he answered. Anzik is in hiding. I do not know quite where. His twin is asleep within arm's reach of mine.
So is that it? Jinzan asked, seething. You would hold a young boy hostage? Where do you have him?
Well, inland, the prisoner managed to make a joke of it.
So is that the bargain you propose? Your life for Anzik's twin?
No,
the prisoner replied. He tried to say something else, but the words failed him. With effort, he instead said, water. Jinzan waited for a guard to fetch water and stew. He placed them well clear of the prisoner as he worked magic to loose him from his shackles and deposit him gently on the cell floor, away from the muck of his bodily excretions. Your name, now, Jinzan started, as if fulfilling Narsikan's bargain from the previous day. The prisoner crawled over and drank sparingly from the jug of water, seeming to lack the strength to tilt it back far enough to drink his fill.
Phelan. Phelan Sarmon, Fourth Circle, personal agent of Warlock Rashan Solaran. We crossed draws briefly at Rainsdark, though you did not know it at the time. That is sort of my speciality, or was until you carved runes into me like that staff you want back so badly.
Phelan picked up the bowl of stew, seeming surprised to find a wooden spoon in it. He began eating, poking at the steaming food before he took a bite. What deal do you propose, then, Phelan Sarmon?
My life for the staff of Galen.
I thought you did not know where it was, Jinzan retorted, having caught Phelan in a lie.
I do not. I have access to Anzik's twin, though. I can get messages through to Anzik. I can get you back both your son and the staff, Phelan replied.
Were you not tasked with finding and retrieving the staff yourself? Jinzan asked. Would that not be a betrayal of your mission?
I would buy my own life with it if I could. Had I not been caught, I would most certainly have taken the staff back. But I have my priorities.
What of the other boy? If I find the staff on my own, what becomes of him?
I plan no harm to that boy in either case. He is to be my apprentice. Of course, I could not say what might happen if I were to die here or go mad, but I intend no harm.
Very well. Have Anzik bring me the staff and you may have your life, Kadrin traitor. Rashan was gone. The Iron Spar had borne him aloft with a crew of sailors from the Navy and the ship's sea captain. Kyrus gave even odds of anyone besides the warlock surviving trials he was sure to put them all through. With the warlock gone, Kyrus was in charge of the top-level affairs of the Empire. Or rather, Brannis was in charge of those, and Kyrus was tasked with being Brannis. It was getting more complicated the more he thought about it. Without a complete picture of the state of the Empire, he took Rashan's final bit of advice and sought out Brannis's uncle Caladrus. The Tower of Contemplation seemed deserted compared with the energy abounding in the days leading up to the coronation. Kyrus passed several junior sorcerers along the stairs, the sort who got their assignments and carried them out. No one who had a choice seemed to be about.
The murders. The Circle are more in tune to the politics of those killings than I had realized.
He exchanged perfunctory greetings with a few who recognized him, but the acquaintances were not mutual. As he neared the top of the tower, he could hear voices. It sounded as if the inner circle were having a heated debate. It seemed like meeting with Caladrus separately would have to wait. As he summited the mountainous stairway, he gave a salutatory nod to the two guards flanking the entrance,
their trident-like weapons held at the ready. The guards returned the nod of the army's commander, though their own chain of command ran parallel to his, up through to the inner circle. Kyra stood and contented himself to wait outside of the session, ready to take Caladrus aside immediately afterward. The conversation within involved too many people talking over one another for him to make out more than occasional words. All at once, it broke off.
"What ho! Sir Brennus, that source of yours gives you away. Get in here!"
he heard Caladrus's voice bellow from within the sanctum. One of the guards held out an arm in the direction of the inner circle's meeting chamber, formally showing Kyrus the way. Kyrus met the man's amused expression with a wry smile of his own.
"Done in by my own source. I wonder which of them keeps an eye to the ether to have noticed me."
Kyrus walked a few paces to the stairs that led up to the supplicant's floor of the sanctum, the center of the Imperial Circle's power. He had been there before, but the last time he had attended a full, or as full as available sorcerers allowed, session, Gravis Archon had been High Sorcerer. The seating arrangements had moved since then, placing Caladrus to one side of the vacant High Sorcerer's seat and Dolvain to the other.
"Brennus, my boy, come in, come in," Caladrus beckoned.
Kyrus entered the chamber and stood near to the center. It was far less intimidating than it had once been. With his ether vision, he could see the sorcerers behind him, taking away from the feeling of being surrounded. He could also tell who were the powers among the inner circle, and he knew them much better than he had his last time before them all.
"We were just discussing you, Sir Brennus," Fenris added.
The old man to Dolvain's other side had a shrewd look to him that morning.
"What about? I take it that you have received Emperor Somic's proclamation, then?"
Kyrus ventured a guess. There was little else about him worth discussing, at least in an open council session.
"Yes, indeed. Are we to believe this document is legitimate?" Dolvain asked, cutting to the quick. "I find it hard to believe the Emperor would hand control of the Empire to you so shortly after having gained it back from Rashan." "The Emperor was under no compulsion. He read the proclamation over prior to signing it, and I witnessed the signing myself. My own signature below his is also authentic," Kyrus replied.
"I ought to have expected them to raise a fuss over this."
"What threat did Warlock Rashan use to obtain this signature?" Fenris asked. "I do not doubt that it was the Emperor's hand, but I wonder at his motivation for doing so."
"Warlock Rashan is quite persuasive.
He made the Emperor see reason behind appointing another to take on the daily duties of administering the Empire. The Emperor still has ultimate authority, but he chooses not to be bothered by the intricacies of rulership. He will drink and feast and go about selecting an empress. He strikes me as well qualified for all three tasks." "You are an admirable wordsmith, Sir Brennus, but you well admit that Rashan convinced him to leave you in charge of the Empire," Dolvain said. "I would propose that you cede that authority to the Inner Circle. It is well established that we have kept the Empire operating smoothly for longer than anyone had realized until a season ago. In light of the likely coercion at hand, it would be prudent to know that the Empire is in experienced hands."
"As acting High Sorcerer, that would leave the Empire in yours, presumably?" Kyrus asked, directing his question solely at Dolvain.
"In the Inner Circle's hands, yes. I merely lead them. Warlock Rashan hinted that he might forego the title of High Sorcerer, which would leave me in that position."
"I thought that Rashan disliked using seniority as the means to promotion," Kyrus replied innocently. He knew the ages of the Inner Circle members well enough to know better.
"Indeed, he had made clear as much," Dolvain replied. "But as much as you may credit my life extension, both Fenris and Caladrus are my elders. I suppose I ought to take it as complimentary, though. But no, I am in line for High Sorcerer because of my strength of magic."
"Ah, I see. Well, I think I have a solution that would satisfy both sides. We can allow the Emperor's edict to stand, yet still allow the Inner Circle to retain charge of Cadran affairs," Kyrus said, trying to keep a smirk from his features.
"You would write an edict of your own, further ceding power down to us?" Dolvain asked.
"No."
"No?
Dolvane Lurien, I challenge you to a draw for the position of High Sorcerer, or Acting High Sorcerer, whatever post it is you hold. That will settle both issues to my satisfaction, Kairos proclaimed.
So much for keeping out of politics. I suppose that document precluded that, though.
There was a stunned silence in the chamber.
Brennus, what are you doing? You lost to Iridan.
Aloysia broke the silence first.
Anyone who did not see that he threw that match was not paying attention, Caladra shot back.
Fenris nodded his agreement with the sentiment.
I am not Iridan, either, Dolvane said softly.
Caladris tried from Dolvane's peripheral vision to signal him to back down. Eye movements, head shaking, hand gestures, all failed to draw Dolvane's attention from his would-be challenger.
Damn it, man, snap out of it, Caladris relented, breaking with decorum. I know you worked your way to the top with no help from a blooded house. Admirable. Do not let pride get in the way of sense. Look at that source. It is not a matter of training or technique or trying hard.
It was a challenge. If I would still call myself High Sorcerer, I have to accept. That is how it was meant to be. Sorcerers ruling sorcerers by acknowledgement of might. I could withdraw the challenge formally. If you agree to abide Emperor Somic's decree, Kairos offered. I came here to seek counsel from my uncle, not to take control of the Imperial Circle. Carry on as you had, and you will have no quarrel with me.
You would rethink your challenge, then? Dolvane caught hold of the thread he was offered, gave it a tug.
My apologies, Sorcerer Dolvane. I had meant the challenge as a figure of speech. A debate tactic, if you will. I regret if I led anyone to believe otherwise, Kairos conceded. Well, you posed your point eloquently. I see no reason why we should contest the Emperor's transfer of authority to Ser Brennus, Dolvane stated.
He eyed Kairos dangerously, but no hint of that crept into his voice.
If, as I have surmised, this session was called for the primary purpose of discussing Emperor Somic's dispensation of authority, would that not mean that this meeting might now be adjourned? I do have business to discuss with my uncle.
Brennus, my boy, you have a knack for twisting words. I am glad to have you free of so much time in the warlock's company. You are honing that craft against a master of it, Caladris joked.
They had adjourned to Caladris Solaran's office just beneath the sanctum.
He was like that before, near as I have gathered, Celia Mistfield commented.
They had found her waiting there for her superior's return. She was busily making copies of the edict to distribute to the far-flung cities of the Empire.
After he got his source freed up, though, he has been more bold about whose words he is willing to twist.
Trust me, he twisted mine often enough when he was just a knight who had been promoted above his station.
I prevented the subversion of Emperor Somic's orders and averted an embarrassing draw with Dolvane Lurien. What is wrong with that? Kairos asked.
Nothing on the surface of it. It is when those words twist a way I do not like. That is what I worry about. Not being able to twist them back in my favor, Caladris replied, slumping down into his padded, high-backed chair. He tipped it back until it leaned against a bookcase.
What had you needed to speak to me about?
Well, for all that bluster in the sanctum, I was left holding the reins of an empire with no idea how to ride one, Kairos stated.
You could always just do as Rashan does, put me in charge of anything you do not wish to deal with. He has already given me purview over his pet thieves and all the night-stabbing activities, which used to be more of a figurative term, Caladris said. He reached for a drawer that was just within arm's reach of his reclined position. He pulled out a pipe and a box, from which he took a pinch of crushed darweed. He stuffed the bowl of the pipe with the foul-scented herb and set it alight, puffing to create little gouts of smoke.
What do I do about the murders? Kairos asked. Can Dolvane be trusted to follow through on an investigation?
Why would he not be? Celia asked.
Kairos looked in her direction as she spoke, then quickly turned his attention back to Caladris.
Brennus, you can drive yourself mad with such things. If you like, leave dealing with the murders and Dolvane's investigation to me. You are already seeing to the army,
Now add the nobles and court matters to that, and consider yourself sufficiently burdened. It would take me half a season to get you caught up on all the conspiracies of every make and size that are going on among the circle. It was Rashan's style to deal with every detail, but he's a demon. You need sleep. Learn to lean on folk whom you can trust.
Can I trust you? Kairos asked.
Brannis, Celia chided, her tone indignant. It is all right, my dear. Brannis is showing wisdom, if not tact. We ward these rooms so that frank conversations are possible. I know that there are sides being drawn up. I have been drawing up one side of them. Warlock Rashan had little time to align supporters in his favor. I did all that work on his behalf. If you would align yourself with Rashan, you align yourself with me. Thus far, both sides have seen you as a wild card, Brannis. You think too independently to be thought of in Rashan's coin purse, despite all that you owe him. I do not find that a fault. I feel confident that you will see which side is right, not just follow along blindly.
I should still be made aware of these conspiracies, even if I allow you to manage them, Kairos said.
Fair enough. Celia, if you would be so good, take a few evenings and give Brannis an understanding of what goes on when you peel back the layers of this rotted onion of an empire.
Of course, Galadris, Celia said, perhaps a bit too eagerly.
Kairos kept himself from objecting. He felt like he ought to, but really did not wish to. It was the opportunity he had arranged for himself, after all.
Now you have other duties to attend, Galadris said to Celia.
Be about them, my dear, and leave Brannis and me to discuss some family matters.
Celia straightened up the papers she was working on and stood to leave. Kairos stepped aside to let her by.
I will stop by your room this evening around sunset,
Celia whispered to him as she passed by. Kairos nodded in reply. She opened the door, stepped halfway through, then leaned back.
See you tonight, then, Kairos.
She disappeared as the door closed between them.
Now, Brannis,
Galadris continued to talk, but nothing registered with Kairos. He babbled through replies. His brain needed time to recover as he sorted through the possibilities conveyed by that one spoken name. A blackened timber held up a loose blanket of rubble in one corner of the basement of what had once been a store peddling imported goods. Burned wood, shattered pottery, various dented and fire-blackened metal curios had settled into a cooling, mushy mess within the foundation, like layers of sedimentary rock. Basement, first floor, loft, all compressed to a knee-high refuse pile that scavengers would mine for treasures once it seemed safe enough. Hidden beneath that lonely beam, sheltering under it like a lean-to, was Aelon Beff. When the Magrin sorcerers burned their shop to the ground, he and Phelan reacted very differently. The illusionist had attempted a diversion and escape, and failed. Aelon had trusted to something different, dragonflesh. Aelon Beff and Sanbin Colvern had caught Warlock Rashan's attentions after the Battle of Rainsdark.
Of all the feastgoers after the battle,
the two of them were the ones who became most fond of the taste of dragonflesh. Of course, fondness is no crime, but stealing crates full of the cured, smoked flesh of the great reptilian goddess Jadefire, whose proper name was Nihakshtukali, was another matter. The two men gorged themselves in clandestine contests of gastric fortitude. The rarest of delicacies was washed down commoners' gullets by tankards of cheap ale. The warlock's anger had been a capricious thing. One moment, it seemed as if they would be ripped open and gutted to reclaim as much of the precious meat as possible. The next, he was marveling at the uncanny resistance both men had developed to fire. Sandbin's work as a smith was well served by immunity to the effects of the forge's heat. Aelon had found little use for the gift aside from parlor tricks, until he found himself within a burning building. There is an instinct in all animals to flee from fire. Aelon fought that instinct once he saw what had become of Phelan. He knew in his head that the flames could not consume him, but there are organs in the human body that offer their thoughts as secretions, quickening the heart, clenching the gut, widening the eyes.
It was the smoke that panicked him, nearly broke him. The heat from the flames was like the summer sunlight beating on his skin, noticeable but no threat. The smoke clouded his vision, displaced the air, threatened to fill his lungs. Draped with Phelan's invisibility spell, Aelon had pressed himself flat to the floor. Wondering if he dared to flee as the illusionist had, taking his chances against being discovered. In the end, the fear of discovery won out, and he remained frozen in place as the smoke reached floor level. He pressed the cloth of his tunic over his face and breathed through it, still smelling the disconcertingly pleasant smell of wood smoke, despite his precaution. The cloth blocked too much air to his lungs, though, and in his panic he was short of breath and began feeling lightheaded. He took a deep, sucking breath around the cloth, having the fool idea to fill his lungs as they demanded, then resume his filtered breathing. He inhaled the smoke.
He exhaled.
Aelon nearly gave himself away by laughing aloud, exultant in his relief. He sat up, surrounded by fire and engulfed in smoke, a bemused, manic expression spreading across his face. He watched the room burn around him with a rather draconic sense of detachment. He reveled in the absurdity until floors began to give way beneath him. Then practical concerns crashed back down around him. Checking that he was still invisible, he scrambled to the windows to see if anyone was still waiting outside. They were. It was tense as Aelon dodged about the shop, seeking to keep ahead of the destruction, not trusting himself to flee while he could remain hidden within the safety of his private inferno. Eventually, he wound up in the basement, cowering beneath a sturdy section of timber propped where it had fallen in a corner. Something had fallen and knocked him cold. When he had awakened, it was daylight,
although he knew not what day.
He hid away until nightfall, weathering the spring rain that filled the foundation pit a finger's breadth deep. By the starlight of the clearing sky, he found little scraps to shore up his hovel and provision it, unsure of where to go. Now he awoke with a sense of purpose, but no clear direction. He had survived, against all odds, against all reason. He had three choices as far as he could figure them. He could seek out Phelan, should he still live, and rescue him. He could continue the mission and try to contact Anzac Fair to bargain for the staff. Or he could sneak back to Cadran-held territory with his tail between his legs, informing Roshan that the mission had failed. Aelon propped a large shard of a shattered mirror against the stone wall. Huddling beneath the protective canopy offered by the beam, he took a sharp knife and began carefully scraping away at the hair on his scalp. Someone had recognized them and reported about them, knew about them. With no more of Phelan's magic to hide him, he needed to become someone else. None of the three paths he saw would matter if he were identified and captured.
"Your plan was approved, Teba," General Rosen said. "Counselor Fair has sent along two additional instructions, however."
The general and the Blade Priest stood together on a balcony overlooking the central square of Mune. Foot traffic was brisk, both among Cadran citizens and Magrin occupiers. The general looked out over the city as he spoke, but Teba's attention was focused solely on Rosen.
"What conditions has the counselor attached to the plan?" Teba asked.
He stood with his feet spread, arms clasped behind his back.
"He will not honor the bargain, if it is accepted," General Rosen began.
"I am not concerned about that. It is the council's prerogative, and I shall abide by their decision. It will not change the plan."
"He also requests that, if at all possible, Warlock Iridan Solaran be captured alive."
"Does he give any indication of how he will accomplish the feat of caging a warlock?" Teba asked, a scholarly curiosity bubbling to the surface.
"You can ask Dimbek Drawl if you want to know. I do not delve into the details of the magic, but Counselor Fair has instructed him on how to manage exactly that feat."
I may do just that."
"Sir Brannis," Kairos heard behind him. He was still in a haze of mental overflow, unable to put a name to that voice, perhaps able to put too many names to it.
His mind threatened to rebel at the double thinking required of a twinborn. It would have preferred a nice game of chess. "Sir Brennus," the voice persisted. Kyrus was almost back to his own quarters. He could have easily made a dash to the safety of a well-warded room where he could collapse into his bed and try to sort out everything that was going on. Some sense of duty, stuffed away in a resilient corner of his mind, forced Kyrus's head to turn and identify the speaker. It was Varnus. Varnus knew important things.
Blast it!
Varnus was someone he had to stop and talk to.
"What is it?" Kyrus said, no energy in his voice.
"Not for talking about out here. Too many ears. Let's get us behind those wards of yours," Varnus replied.
"That was my plan. I would have had you out there too, though," Kyrus thought wearily.
A few moments later, the two men were sealed up safely in Kyrus's chambers. It occurred to him, not for the first time, that he ought to have a separate office in the palace, apart from his bedchamber. It was growing unseemly, the number of people who saw his soiled clothing and disheveled bed linens.
"What is it?" Kyrus asked again.
"It is Wendell. He's acting strange."
"Strange how? I hardly know him well enough to judge. What makes you say so?" Kyrus pressed.
"Well, he seems distracted, not talking much. Usually he's looking around too much, talking constantly. He seems creepy."
"Could it be something related to his mission for Rashaan?" Kyrus wondered. "Has he given any indications of his progress?"
"Well, we found a boy who speaks Magrin and can see ether. Wendell picked him up at the Pious Grove Sanctuary."
"Anzik Fair," Kyrus said, drawing a surprised look from Varnus.
"So that's what we're up to?" Varnus fumed. "We're taking twin-born boys hostage?"
"Calm yourself. No. We are bargaining with a twin-born runaway for a stolen staff. Find out what is going on in Magrin. I do not care whether Wendell or Phelan wishes to divulge it. Wring it out of him somehow. Preferably, and I mean preferably, not exclusively, without violence. Wendell and Phelan both seem too comfortable with dissembling. Both work at it professionally. He cannot keep such crucial information to himself, though. He should have already told you his plan once the two of you were alone and away from Rakashi."
Wait. Hold on now. Rakashi's one of us. Anything you say in front of me or Tanner, you can say in front of him.
And a fair portion of what you say to Juliana or Soria. But don't get carried away on that count.
But what I mean is, you don't have to go sneaking about behind Rakashi's back. He has a knight's soul in him, and a scholar's eyes. He can keep his mouth shut about things that shouldn't go beyond Tellurac.
Maybe one day I too can trust him like you all do, but I do not know him yet. Tanner I barely know, but he is an officer in my army. You I have known for summers, since Brennus was a young man. Rakashi's twin is Safshan, which means if he fights for Magrin. I cannot let him in on the key to their undoing. The man would have to be made of stone to sit by for that.
He is.
No man is. He has a heart and a conscience. He will decide using those, like any man would. Perhaps he will make the decision that favors us. Perhaps he will break the bargain you have made for the benefit of his people.
You are a smart fellow, Kyrus. You've set it up so Tanner and I can't get to Rakashi and Soria doesn't know any better.
Kyrus was poring over written petitions from the nobles and merchants, tasks that had until recently been within Rashaan's domain, when the knock came. It startled him from his glazed viewing of complaint after complaint, laying bare the pettiness of Kadrin's upper class. Kyrus stood, leaving the papers scattered about his desk, and released the wards. The door opened by telekinesis, a spell he felt he was finally growing comfortable with silently. Celia stood there outside, having dressed for the occasion. The simple black dress she wore for her official duties had been replaced with the dress he had first seen her in at Rainsdark. She had let down the tight, elaborate knots that kept her hair out of her way while she wrote. It fell loose about the bare skin of her shoulders and back.
"I suddenly feel underdressed," Kyrus greeted her, smiling without having to think about it.
"Nonsense!
You are the most powerful man in Cadrus at the moment. After the Emperor, of course, Celia said, punctuating the last bit with a roll of the eye that none outside in the hallways could have seen. She seemed about to enter when Kyrus waved her away, heading for the doorway himself. I've had my fill of this room for a while. We can dine in the eastern sitting room.
Will that be safe enough to talk?
Rashan held meetings there. It is warded after a fashion. It allows servants in and out, but nothing can pass undetected. So long as we mind our tongues while our courses are brought and our wine refilled, we may speak freely, Kyrus replied. The eastern sitting room was cozy by palace standards. 20 might have talked over drinks in the space it provided, but the lone table was set for two. They were surrounded by priceless heirlooms of the Empire, dating back hundreds of summers, a few possibly thousands. Celia sat in her chair as if afraid to touch anything beyond the confines of the table linens.
Brannis, this is too nice. Emperors used to take tea here with their empresses or concubines. If I broke something here, I could not replace it with a lifetime salary.
I suppose that there is an emperor to take offense now, should we wreck the place, Kyrus replied. No more of Rashan's inspirational acts of vandalism.
How do you know about that? Celia asked,
her face scrunching up in a frown. Kyrus tried, unsuccessfully, not to find it adorable.
I thought I was supposed to be briefing you on the little background dealings of the Empire.
You must either not be very much of a spy, or you must be continuing to act so, if you thought that was why we were dining together tonight, Kyrus replied.
Oh, really? Why do you think we are having dinner tonight? Celia asked,
slathering on the sarcasm lest Kyrus miss it. Two reasons. The other is that I need to know a few things about your dreams, Kyrus answered.
Other reason, huh? Before I go any further with that, which of you started that annoying little word trick, you or Rashan?
I have not kept track. Him, I think.
So what was the reason too obvious to name? Celia demanded. Pretend I am too dumb to guess it.
You are not stupid. You are witty, beautiful, and resourceful. I find myself drawn to you for those reasons and more, despite my obstinate resistance due to having been prodded toward you at every turn. I dislike being manipulated, and I react poorly to it. I might, be able to get past all that, because for all the reasons I should push you away, none truly matter in the end. What if our meeting was all arranged, our times together plotted, your dogged pursuit of me according to orders? What of it, if in the end we would choose each other anyway?
Celia was speechless for a moment, blushing from forehead to neckline.
Just answer me one thing first, truthfully.
You accidentally called me Kyrus earlier, when you left Caladris's office.
Where did you hear that name? I remembered you from my dreams,